and welcome to Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel Corman. Today, my guest is indie folk singer-songwriter Fair Hazel. I gotta say, I hadn't met Fair Hazel before, and it was really interesting to talk to him and learn about how creative he is. I mean, his mind, just the way he comes up with ideas for his music videos, for his marketing, he's just overall a really creative guy. He has a new album out right now called I Sold My Soul for Fair Hazel, and it's got 16 tracks on it because this guy just keeps making music, writing music. He wants to put it all out there. So like I say, it was really great getting to know Fair Hazel, and I hope you enjoy this as well. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Fair Hazel. You've caught me rearranging my pillows back here.
That's okay. I just slept on, but I'm glad I've made it.
You have made it. How's it going?
It's really good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. I was listening to some episodes earlier today.
Were you?
Can't remember the guy's name, but he's also British.
He is. I've actually had a lot of Brits on this show, you will find out. Because you're from Brighton, correct?
Right, yeah.
But you played music in London as well?
I lived in London. I was born in Brighton and my parents lived there, but I lived in London for like the last 2 years before I moved to LA.
And you moved to LA the beginning of this year, didn't you? What a perfect time.
January 10th, I had a month to glimpse how nice and wonderful it was, and then shut down. Boom.
I know. How has this time been for you?
Honestly, it's been great. It's been much more productive than even before the pandemic, so I feel good. I feel I've been just trying to learn. My wife and I have been just trying to learn as much as we can. Like, we've learned how to make music videos, and we've been directing some music videos for other people. And we've just been trying to gather kind of skills in every trade so that we're kind of jack of all trades. But it's just been a good time to like take the time to finally learn the stuff you wanted to learn how to do and explore things and make mistakes.
Have you learned engineering and producing, or was that something you were doing prior?
That was something I was doing prior, but I've definitely had the time, especially making this most recent album, to kind of improve. And I'm not very good at it, I don't feel yet, but I feel like by mixing all of my own music and recording all of my own music and mastering it and being the person in every step of the process, I'll eventually get to a point where I'm good enough to offer it to other people.
And your wife's in the band. You just mentioned your wife. You see, so you guys moved here together.
Well, I moved here initially just with the intent of coming for like 6 months on a tourist visa. And because she was here and it's such a headache, she's American, such a headache trying to be in the same place for an extended period of time. And then the pandemic hit and I was thinking like, oh crap, what if I have to go home and I won't be able to come back because there'll be travel bans and all sorts of stuff. So it was like a Thursday in March and we were just laying in bed and my parents had just called and they were like, maybe you guys should get married because otherwise, who knows, you might be stuck apart for months or even a year or whatever. And then the next day we were like googling like how to get married now. Like no idea what the process is, and everywhere in California to do it was closed because all the offices were closed because of the pandemic. And so we drove up to Oregon where she's from, and we did it in a woman's house who was like a licensed I forget what they're called, but the people who marry
people.
She was ordained. And she had like Sting playing on a little CD player and it was just like in her living room and we did it.
So you guys weren't even engaged?
No, it was like a 24-hour turnaround.
It was just this was your idea. This is how you stay in America.
Right. Well, also I just didn't want to be separated from her.
Of course. Oh my gosh. What a story.
I know.
So this pandemic has actually been really good to you.
Yeah, very eventful and good all around.
Wow. So you're here to stay?
I'm here to stay. I actually can't leave until my visa finishes processing, which they estimate could be up to 3 years. So I might.
Are you serious? You can't leave at all? You can't go back and forth?
No. They have to approve my reason and I have to pay $600 for them to approve the reason. So it's like...
Visas are so complicated to me. I don't quite understand how they work. Like I say, a lot of my friends are British musicians, so they go back and forth and I hear all these things and then you have to go back to get it approved and whatnot. I mean, it's like, is this, it's not stressful enough to just be an artist. You have to figure out all these other things and all these other loopholes and I guess administrative tasks.
And especially the artist visa, which I got rejected for, they don't even, it's like they're basing your merit off of these criteria that they have without even like listening to your music or judging you as like an artist. It's like you submit a huge 600 page document proving that you're like worthy of being an artist.
And don't they look at your Instagram too? Don't they look at your social media? Yeah. Now that's a factor of getting a visa. It's like, I'm so much more than my social media. I'm not, it's like, yeah, listen to my music, listen to my art and why I want to work in this country.
Right. Exactly.
Crazy. Well, welcome. How exciting.
I made it one way or another.
And you just released an album recently, right? Back in October? I guess back in October. That was a month ago. Yeah. A month ago.
Very slowly.
Yeah.
I was working on it in London. I started and then, I mean, I just had like a few rough demos and then I brought all my studio stuff here and I've finished it here just during lockdown, played everything on it apart from drums, which my friend Louis plays in London, mixed it, recorded it, mastered it, did the artwork, you know, yeah. Super DIY kind of thing. But yeah, it's 16 tracks and it's called I Sold My Soul for Fair Hazel.
Yeah, I Sold My Soul for Fair Hazel. So what does that mean? So Fair Hazel is your band name. We should say, do you go by your real name at all or just Fair Hazel?
Hugh is
your name is Hugh, but you go by Fair Hazel. So what does I Sold My Soul to Fair Hazel mean?
Harry Nilsson, who's one of my favorite musicians from like the 60s and 70s, all of his album titles or most of them had his name in. There's like Nielsen Schmielsen and Son of Schmielsen and all this stuff which revolves around his name. And I just really liked that. And so my first album was called I'm a Friend of Fair Hazel. And I had seen in The Irishman, the film, Jimmy Hoffa, or the Al Pacino character, is wearing like a political button that says, I'm a friend of Jimmy Hoffa. And yeah, I was like, wow, that's so cool. So I took that and put Fair Hazel in the place of it. And then I thought to keep on kind of on the same branding as that, why not do another kind of political style button? So I went researching political buttons from the 60s and 70s and I found something that said I sold my soul for somebody, I can't remember who, somebody I hadn't heard of, and I just kind of redesigned the button with my face and my name.
And also the political button is very timely with the 2020 election.
Right, that was completely, I didn't even put the two together.
You didn't? It wasn't even intentional?
No, it came out at the right time.
And thank God we can all breathe, right?
Yeah,
we can all breathe. Yeah, what a time to move to America, man.
I know.
Again, as we just said, so you go by Fair Hazel. Where does that name come from?
Where I live in London, every street is called something Gardens. And Fair Hazel Gardens is the street that's kind of perpendicular to mine. And I used to make music as Hugh MacDonald, but I started working back in London with Communion Music, a record label. And we were basically decided to like either rebrand the whole thing, because it was very much like I'd done everything on paint and it wasn't good quality. So they said either we rebrand the whole thing under a new name and you can keep your Hugh MacDonald past persona, or you delete everything that you've ever done as Hugh MacDonald and you can still be called Hugh MacDonald. And so I decided I didn't want to delete everything I'd ever done. And so I was like brainstorming all these names, me and my mom and dad. We had like lists of names that now
give me some options. Honestly, that were on the list.
Worst one that I remember that I feel terrible that I ever came up with such a bad name, Canadian Shaman. And I was
Canadian
like, what?
Canadian Shaman?
Right. What is that? It's just what relevance does that have?
Are you Canadian at all?
No, not a Canadian, not a shaman.
Okay. It kind of so, keeps it fun, right? It kind of keeps people guessing who you are.
Right. So there was pretty much just a ton of rubbish names. And I sent a few of the good ones over to Communion and they were like, Fair Hazel is good. And I felt good about that one. So Fair Hazel was born.
I like it. So how long have you been Fair Hazel for?
2.5-3 years.
So yeah. You planned on making music and releasing music as Fair Hazel in London up until the pandemic hit.
Right. And then, I wanted to come and see Danielle anyway. And so I got this visa that allowed me to stay longer. And then who knew I'd be staying here for forever?
I know. And how long have you guys been dating?
Since 2015.
Oh, wow. So you guys were going to get married anyways.
Right. It was bound to happen. We met first day of class at college.
Really?
First day.
You went to Berkeley, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So was that the first time you had been to the States?
I came one time on an exchange program. I went to stay with a guy in the Bronx, maybe. And he came to stay with me. But apart from that, yeah, that would have been the first time. Oh, no, I did actually come to a Berkeley summer program beforehand to kind of get a feel for it. That was the first long period of time.
Did you like it?
I loved it. It was just like being surrounded by musicians and being completely independent for the first time and just being surrounded by people who loved like engineering music as much as I loved making it and kind of feeding off of each other. That was a really amazing environment to be in.
So take me back. When did you first have a passion for music and when did you decide you wanted to be a musician?
I think from like day one, I have these photos of me when I was 4 or 5 with a guitar. And I honestly don't remember considering doing anything else apart from hotel management for like a few years. I was like, I could be a hotel manager. I don't know why. I just has always felt like that's the only option, the only thing I could do.
So what steps did you take to kind of go towards that goal?
A lot of forcing myself. I wasn't a very comfortable performer and my parents would kind of push me to do like open mics when I was in my early teens. And I would always make up excuses to try and get out of it. Like my fingers were really hurting, so I couldn't play guitar. All sorts of ridiculous stuff that they bought for some reason. And I started doing these open mics when I was in London, like one every night for months. And I just eventually got so comfortable. And then I assembled a band around me. And then I just started recording with whatever I had, which wasn't much at the time, and just putting it out there. And it's kind of just slowly snowballed ever since. And I've had some really cool opportunities like opening for Agnes Obel and meeting like the Counting Crows. And they've let me play at their festival twice.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm a big Counting Crows fan.
Oh, they are just the coolest people in the world.
Are they? That's really good to hear. How did you get connected to them? How did you play at their festival?
So a crazy story, basically, my drummer, Louis, his dad was a Counting Crows fan, I think in the 90s, and I might be getting some of these details a little bit wrong, but he would go to all of their shows in London, and eventually, well, the band wasn't as big as they were, so I guess it must have been before the 90s, as they are now. And so they would recognize that this guy was coming over and over again, and they became really good friends. And so my drummer's dad and Adam from the Counting Crows have been like really best friends ever since from just being a fan.
So wait, they're buddies just because he was a fan and kept going to shows? And they, so everyone who's listening, it's that easy. Just if you want to become friends with one of your the bands you like, just keep going and be just, you know.
And eventually they'll recognize you.
Eventually they'll recognize you. You'll be lifelong friends. Wow, what a story.
I know, crazy. And you, I can see why they got along so well, because Adam's just the nicest guy. We stayed at his place in New York when we were playing the festival both times, the band and I, because we have no money to spend on New York hotels. And he's just the coolest guy. He's just making us food, letting us watch movies in his movie room. And, you know,
he's got his own theater.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Of course
premium,
he does.
Premium.
Speaking of films, you're a big movie buff, I take it.
Yes.
From listening to your music, I heard a lot of movie references. And then you also have a song on your new album called 10,000 People in Hollywood.
Right.
So tell me about that. So you've also been a big
so
movie
my
fan.
My dad is a stills photographer. He originally was a photojournalist, but now he works in movies and TV. And so I got to go on set with him a lot when I was younger, and I just like developed both my parents are really into films. Like they watch several movies per day. So I really got like a good guide from them on what to watch and what kind of things were of quality. And I just feel like music and cinema are so intertwined, like they can't really exist without each other. You take the music out of any film and it doesn't have tension, it doesn't have the same emotional pulling of the heartstrings. And I kind of like to imagine that when I'm making music, I'm placing it in a imaginary film scene. And so I think that's where it comes together. The 10,000 people in Hollywood was just like, when I moved here, everybody was like, oh, don't move to LA. Oh, it's the worst. You'll hate it. Oh, people are so fake, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the stuff that people, I assume you're in LA, right?
I am in LA. Yep.
Right.
I'm probably right down the street from you. We don't even know it.
Right. Same apartment. And people always tell you these things. And I came here and that just wasn't the case at all, that people were fake. And I mean, maybe you'd see the occasional person posing with like a Lamborghini on the side of the freeway in booty shorts or whatever they're called. But I mean, it was a rare occurrence. But the song was just kind of thinking about that, like 10,000. And also people just view LA as Hollywood. And then
when you
get here, you don't realize that that's just a tiny little place.
There's a stigma here. There's a stigma that it's very fake and very Barbie-esque and Instagram models and all that, which definitely does exist, but there also are really real, authentic people here, but you just don't see that in the media, I think.
Right. If you're not one of those fake people, you're probably not going to interact with people in that kind of group anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
On the Monica Beach one day, but you won't like... Yeah, you'll never come face to face with them. But the song was just kind of thinking about that topic and like 10,000 people in Hollywood holding each other's hands. You'll never get there if you think you should. Those are the lyrics. And I was just thinking like, that's what people perceive, but that's not how it's been for me.
So 10,000 people means that there's so many other people out there.
Right. And there's also, or also it's just this idea of there's all these people think in Hollywood, and it's like a tight inner circle, and there's all these people trying to get in. But LA to me has been much more inviting than that, and the community of musicians and creative people here has been incredible compared to other places I've been.
I was going to ask you, I know that you were only here for a short time before lockdown happened, but how has that community been? Like, you've been able to still meet people at, have you been going to shows or have you performed here before everything went down?
Yeah, I was in the first month that I had before everything closed down, I was going on Eventbrite literally every day looking for things to do just to meet people or shows or whatever that were free. And I think you know Tal and Aaron, right?
Yeah.
So that's how I met them. I went to some Eventbrite meeting and it was like, Tal is here to speak about, you know, her work with UT. And I was like, okay, this seems like a good person to meet. So I went along with my friend Nate and there was like five other people there. And it was quite a weird thing, but I made a great connection out of it. So I was just going to all these events and I found that there was just so much to do. There wasn't ever an excuse to not be productive, because there was always something. If you wanted to go to a lecture about music, there was something. If you wanted to go to a gig, there was inevitably something. Mm-hmm. And we were also hosting at this house, basically, where there's six of us, and we're all musicians, or soon to be, I think, seven of us. And so we got a three-person house that was in a fancy, like a big fancy three-person house. But since it was...
Is this where you live right now?
Right.
Oh, wow.
I mean, not fancy compared to like... what my budget
right
elsewhere. And we made bedrooms out of like the little closet and out of the living room and whatever, so it's just a kind of DIY space. But we have this big living room, and we were hosting shows. We did three shows before lockdown, and we had like bands in the living room, audience up on the balcony outside of one of
the
bedrooms.
That is such a great idea. I love that.
Right, because in London, there's no house shows because people don't really have houses. It's just apartments and you can't be that loud. And in Boston, where I went to Berkeley, it was like house show central because every house had a basement. And it was like at night you would come, it would be dark and kind of musky smelling, but there would be cool music playing. And so we wanted to bring that here. And it was so cool. We had a tattoo artist upstairs giving like tattoos. We had a magician walking around doing magic, and we wanted to basically, our plan for the year was to make it like a big space where like visual artists could come and put up stuff on the wall for sale, and we'd just bring like art forms of all different kinds together. And it was going really good, but then obviously here we are.
I love that. So how many parties were you able to have before?
We had three, I think.
Okay.
And we had like three artists playing each one, bands most of the time. And the goal was, since we all have our own projects, the idea to kind of integrate ourselves into it was one of us would be on the lineup each show. So like maybe we'd be opening or closing or whatever, but at least one of us would have an opportunity to kind of promote ourselves through it.
What a great way to form a sense of community.
Right. And people were coming that we'd never, like, we maybe knew 10 people, and then 80 people would show up who I don't even know how they found out about it, but friends of friends of friends.
I was going to say, how did you advertise it?
Well, we couldn't legally advertise it with posters, because I think there's some restrictions on it turns it into a business or something. So we had it. So the regulations were that it had to be RSVP only and no ticketed door price or anything like that.
It was free? So,
yeah, it was free.
Nice.
And so we just invited the few people we knew and said, please bring four people if you can. And just a wash of people came. And every time, I guess the word got out a little bit, more and more people came. And it was so cool. It was like it went till 2 a.m. And the crazy thing was, everywhere else in the world I'd been, if you would have a party, the next morning you'd wake up and the place would be trashed and lamps would be broken. Everybody would stay at the end and clean up the house with us.
Are you serious?
Like 2 a.m., like doing the dishes, taking out the recycling.
And we were like, everyone, no, LA is not that bad. That's right. A great example of the good people here.
Right. And it was just awesome.
Well, when everything goes back to normal, you got to start those up again. And please send me an invite.
I definitely will. We might be thinking about doing them outside because we have a front yard, and maybe just having like 10 people with chairs that are spaced and masks enforced, and having just like an acoustic act. But we're not sure how.
You definitely should do that. So you were saying you were a shy kid, so it was hard for you to perform, and your parents were pressuring you to get on stage. How did you come out of your shell?
I think just having to perform all the time and realizing, like at one point in London, I was busking and I would see all these people go before me, and they would be like real performers, like they would phrase things well, they'd talk a lot, they'd put on a show, and I would go and I'd like play my original songs, and I wasn't comfortable like saying, hey, people, come gather around or whatever. So I would do so much worse, and I wouldn't have a crowd and everybody else would have a crowd. And I just realized, like, maybe I should just get over it and just be a little bit more outgoing when I need to. And it clicked, I think, through just having to be in front of people so many times and realizing that the way to not feel bad at the end of it, like, oh, nobody liked me, is to try and engage them a little bit more.
So was it just a self-consciousness?
I felt for some reason like, oh, I don't want to impose. I don't want to go out there and perform busking on the street because I just don't feel like I should be imposing on people's time. I don't know. I don't know. I just didn't feel confident having eyes on me and singing and doing stuff that I didn't think I was that good at. But after Berkeley, since Berkeley, I haven't really had that problem.
Were you singing your own songs? Were they covers?
That was another mistake. Like everybody else was doing Ed Sheeran, the whole catalog of Ed Sheeran, and people were loving it because it was like tourist central also. And I was like doing my sad songs, like my really folky, like saddest songs. And it was just the wrong vibe. And eventually I started doing some covers of artists in my wheelhouse, like Ben Howard.
Love Ben Howard.
So good.
Oh, so good.
That would get more heads turning, but yeah, I don't think busking and original songs are made for each other.
But you do have a similar vibe to Ben Howard. Like you definitely have like that singer-songwriter folk. Like I was listening to your music this morning and it was a great way to kind of start the day. It just kind of mellows you out. It puts you in a good mood. It's a good chill vibe.
Oh, thank you. He's on the label, or he was on the label Communion that I was on briefly in London. And he was my idol, and he was the reason I wanted to work with them and everything.
how did you get into Berklee? That's a very hard music school to get into.
I went to the audition in London, and I thought I was going to throw up on the way there. I was so nervous. I'd been thinking about it for like months. And I prepared a love song by Sarah Bareilles and an original. And I just did it. And luckily, the interviewer was a guy who I had met at the summer school program. And so I kind of had a bit of a in there, and he wasn't as... But I just passed the audition.
It's that simple. You just apply and audition and that's it.
It seems like it.
Wow. And so tell me about your experience there. What did you learn in music school that you didn't know before?
Well, I took a program that was called professional music, and it was, instead of doing like a songwriting major or an engineering major, you could just pick whichever modules from all of the majors you wanted. So I did like part business, part songwriting, part production. I dropped out. I didn't finish, but I had only seen music as like a struggling artist with no band playing open mics. And I hadn't thought about, oh, well, I could record myself and I could learn this stuff about business and I could come to out of Berklee with an understanding that would prepare me for actual real life situations. And so it was just super helpful to figure out kind of how to be self-sufficient and function on my own, doing publicity and doing booking shows and doing everything that people need a team for, until I could get to a point where I could get a team to help me out with it.
That was really smart, because you already know how to write songs, sing songs, play guitar, and this was a way for you to kind of get an education where maybe something you couldn't self-teach.
Right, exactly. And I got really into this thing called guerrilla marketing, which is like finding unique ways, usually on no budget, to get the word out about something. And I got obsessed with, do you know Shep Gordon?
Uh-uh.
So he was a manager and kind of creative guy. He's still alive. And he managed Alice Cooper. And he like created Food Network. He did all sorts of random things within the world of entertainment. And he was kind of a genius marketing kind of, he would scheme little things to get the word out about something. Like, for example, he paid in London in Piccadilly Circus, like the biggest tourist spot, he paid a truck driver to pretend to break down and not move for 2 hours with a big billboard of Alice Cooper naked, saying Alice Cooper on the side of his billboard.
My gosh.
And he said, we'll cover the jail fees that you'll inevitably get because they'll find out you're lying, all this stuff. And it became like this big publicity stunt. So I got obsessed with things like that. And obviously I didn't put any naked billboards of myself. but I would like go after Halloween, I would get like the bags of discounted Halloween M&Ms from CVS or whatever. And I would go around with a handwritten letter that I had photocopied a million times and put little letters and like a bag of M&Ms on people's car windshields, and I would get some followers through that. Or I would...
That's genius.
I made custom coffee sleeves, and I asked places, coffee shops, if they would take my sleeves for free, just to give them free sleeves, but I had my like my album.
So coffee shops would put your logo on people's coffee. That is so smart.
Right. So I was thinking of all these things, or researching them and finding out about them. And I love doing that kind of stuff. But that's definitely something that I figured out was something I enjoyed doing and beneficial at Berklee.
I think that's genius. And so what are the ways you kind of marketed this new album? I know you said the buttons, but are there other kind of things you were doing to get people's attention in a unique way?
This time, since I have Tal and Aaron and Taylor and people at Taller Management, who know a bit more what they're doing, we partnered up with Musicians Without Borders, which was a charity that I had known about and was quite interested in becoming involved with for quite a while, and basically did like a fundraiser. I was thinking back to like the Rolling Stones, and they did Rock and Roll Circus, that movie with all these different artists, and they were all dressed up funny. And I was thinking back to like in the olden days, people used to release kind of movies that were just concert performances. Like Barbara Streisand had some, Beatles had some. and it would be like an event that people would go to see, but it would just be a recorded performance. And I wanted to do that, and I had met so many amazing musicians at Berklee who I felt like they're, if we formed together as a community, we could kind of amplify each other. And so we made this film with seven different artists performing, some of whom I recorded because they were here in LA, and some of whom recorded themselves wherever in the world they were. And we put together this film, which was like a fundraiser for Musicians Without Borders. We partnered up with this headphone company, which I'm wearing right now, gave away some headphones through this event. So we did definitely something more professional than my leaving discounted Halloween candies on cars. But it was really fun, and it was great to be able to showcase other musicians as well.
What I think is so cool about you is that you're not only a musical artist, you find other ways to express creativity, whether it be leaving M&Ms on people's cars for advertising, whether it be incorporating film. You just have such a wide range of creativity that you express, which I think is really cool, and I think separates you from other artists.
Thank you. I just enjoy, I think, just finding new things that excite me. And my dad let me take one of his cameras to LA with me. And so that's just been so invaluable to learn how to film things. I mean, I'm still very bad at it, but I can at least have a better eye than I did a few months ago. And we filmed even a video for Michelle Ray, who's one of Tola's other artists. And we've been filming another video for one of our roommates, and we got a drone, my wife and I, because we like doing all these creative things together. We got a drone to film this like NASA rocket company. They hired us through a friend. And so it's just been fun to like learn all these different creative means of expression. And it also helps when you're having a dip in like musical creativity to be able to dabble in something else for a little bit.
Yeah, that's my next question. How do you stay so motivated, especially in these times when everyone's locked up at home? And you said you've been the most productive this year than you have. What keeps you motivated?
I think if in a weird way, seeing like other people I went to college with and seeing them doing really well or doing better than me, even though that sounds messed up, sometimes makes me feel like, I should be doing more.
It's that pressure. You're like, I got to get to their level. Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then I also just, I just seem to be writing a lot, whether I want to or not, that just songs are coming to me. So I have a lot of songs, like that's why the album was 16 songs. And I already had to cut out like five or six that didn't make the cut. So I've just been writing a lot, and that's just been good. And I'm just not interfering with wondering why it's happening. But yeah, just I feel really anxious when I'm not doing something creative. And I feel guilty that my time is being spent watching seasons one of and two of You on Netflix, even though it's so good. And so that fuels me, is not wanting to feel anxious about being behind.
So it sounds like writing music is a tool for you to deal with anxiety.
Right. Definitely. I think so. Yeah.
I guess that will motivate anyone, especially in these times that are very stressful and very anxiety provoking.
Totally.
Why do you make music? I know you were kind of just touching on it helps with personal things, but why do you make music?
I think I love the effect music has on me when I listen to it. And I know that it's something that people, it's like a universal language, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's something that people all over the world can get like the same feeling from the same arrangement of notes. And I just really want to, I don't know. I just really want to create songs that I want to hear and that would move me in some way. And I just love it. I just enjoy the process. And I'm almost addicted to the process of recording it and adding layers and messing with new toys and whatnot. And I just love it. Yeah.
Do you write with your wife? Because you said she's an artist as well.
Yes, she is. She has a project called Juniper. And we do write together, and we're actually recording an album together, like a Fair Hazel and Juniper album that we're going to hopefully put out at the beginning of next year.
How exciting.
Yeah.
And I know you were talking about shooting videos earlier. Did you shoot your recent music videos? Because you've released a couple.
Right. Yeah, I did all of them. We were just trying to think of what we could do on no budget. And so the one that we had the most fun with, I think we got these masks, paper masks of my face printed with eye holes, you know.
I saw this one. I was going to ask you about it, but explain it to people what happens in it.
And I put out a thing on Instagram and I said, can anybody be comfortable enough to dance in public on Ventura Boulevard with a mask of my face on? And I got my roommates and a few other people on Instagram to come. And we just went like near my house on Ventura. We went all over the place and kind of shot people dancing with my face on. I wasn't dancing because I can't dance to save my life. But it was so much fun. And we even at one point went into 7-Eleven and we asked the woman working there if she would wear the mask. And she wore the mask while she was mopping the floors, and she wore the mask checking people out at the cash desk. So it was such a good time.
You just asked her on the fly and she was down?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow, you've really come out of your shell, haven't you?
I don't know if I did the asking.
Oh, you didn't. Okay.
But I was definitely behind the scenes watching.
How fun. Again, I just thought of this as you were telling the story. Masks, again, very timely.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing I didn't
think
of.
Just saying, masks and political buttons.
Right. Maybe I should be selling masks branded with my face.
Maybe you should. And then hand out little M&Ms. I love M&Ms. Gosh, I have to buy some of those. That makes me hungry now.
Yeah, nobody can be disappointed with a bag of M&Ms.
Nobody can. Absolutely not. I love that. If someone left me M&Ms on my windshield, I'd be a little skeptical. I'm like, okay, what's in these?
True. That's true.
But I probably wouldn't overthink it too much. I'd probably just enjoy it. What other goals do you have? What do you hope to accomplish, let's say, in like 5 years?
I think I really want to focus on building my social media presence, as disgusting as it is, just because it's kind of been a slow growing thing, and that it's not really something I give my time and attention to, but it definitely is something I should if I want to keep up. So I want to figure out kind of new ways to be active online, and also, I mean, to prepare for times like these, being innovative online definitely would help you as an artist right now during the pandemic when that's all people can see of you. So I want to kind of focus my time on that. I'll definitely be recording more music. I already have a few songs, new songs since the album. But I think definitely I miss playing live so much that until I can play live, I just want to do live sessions, like filmed live sessions, even if I have to film them myself. But we just did one with Jam in the Van.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that was super cool. And so just more stuff like that would be great.
Sounds awesome. So what is your social media? Where can people follow you?
The main hotspot's Instagram. But it's everywhere. It's @FairHazel_ on Instagram. That's where I honestly do most of the things I do online.
It was really great to meet you and talk to you. It was really good to get to know you.
Yeah, you too.
Best of luck. And I hope those house parties can come back soon, or at least an outdoor one for us to...
Yeah, let you know either way.
Please do. You like how I just invited myself? Sorry.
That's what we want people to do.
I'll bring a couple friends. So I guess we have to be socially distanced. We have to be a little more careful now. But well, I look forward to it. It was so great to meet you, Hugh. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that concludes my conversation with Fair Hazel. I really hope you enjoyed listening to our conversation. As I mentioned, he has a new album out right now called I Sold My Soul for Fair Hazel. I'm going to leave you with his song called See You Tomorrow off this record. If you're liking what you're hearing, please check us out on Instagram. We're at Inside the Artist Radio or Inside the Artist on Facebook. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you are listening to this. Really appreciate the support, and thank you so much for listening to Inside the Artist. So when all we've got's each other.